T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
What's your name, son?
Danny Bernstein. I'm from Deerfield, Illinois.
Dan Bernstein on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
That's enough. Don't care. Not interested.
Insightful sports talk for your workday from one of Chicago's most respected radio professionals.
Professional what?
Professional penis.
You don't know what the hell you're doing!
Despite the vision of Rick Hahn to trade Chris Sale, to trade Adam Eaton, to restock the farm system, to find available international players and convince them to come to the White Sox, to have then the ability to convince so many of these young players to sign team-friendly contract extensions, and then to allow the organization to have embraced this kind of expressiveness, this idea of being themselves, of giving players full agency to blossom into who they are, to then have all of that big-timed for no apparent good reason is really unfortunate. And it's such a downer.
Dan Bernstein.
The guy is full of hot air.
In a semi-permanent state of flatulence.
Middays on The Score.
And yet here we are, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. A very busy Friday show. It is a Bears Friday amid everything that's going on. James Feegan is going to join us, the Sox beat writer for The Athletic, who has been talking to White Sox players and White Sox officials, as some of us also have been. At 9:40, he's going to let us know what he's hearing from up and down that roster, from that dugout, what they're saying about their new manager. Anthony Herron will be in for the entire 10 o'clock hour to get us ready for Bears and Saints. It is the late game on Fox on Sunday. And then Matt Spiegel will sit in for the 11 o'clock hour. He of WSCR's Hit and Run and Inside the Clubhouse. And the two of us will be joined by Terry Bors at 11:20. And I think, look, if Tony La Russa is coming back at 76, I think Terry should be back on the beat. I think he should just go and, you know, write game stories and do stuff on deadline and just, you know, get him back out there every day, because, you know, put the band back together. And we'll have surprises along the way as well. 312-644-6767 is our number at WSCR The Score. You can email us at Bernstein at 670thescore.com. That's where you go to listen to us live. We stream at 670thescore.com. You can text the text zone. You text 312-644-6767. And when you do, we reply. Message and data rates may apply. It's brought to you by Rosen Hyundai of Algonquin. Save time. Shop online at rosenhyundai.com. Twitter is at Bernstein670. My personal feed is at Dan_Bernstein. Download the radio.com app. You can stream The Score on your mobile devices there. It's a great way to do it. DVR-like controls. I was listening on the app yesterday, trying to keep track of everything that was going on. Interact with the show and the station on Facebook by liking the 670 The Score page. We also have our Twitch feed. The Twitch feed is twitch.tv/Chicago670thescore. And Brian Gertsch directs that feed, and he also handles the chat that goes on there as well. Jay Zawoski is our executive producer. And it's Adam Studzinski on the board in the place of the executioner, who is usually the person there doing the things that he does. So they rolled him out, and he was answering questions, and there he was trying to explain away some of what he had said in the past. And I got to tell you, didn't put my mind all that much at ease as far as the way he's going to relate to this team. And there were a couple of different places about that. And I want to do two different segments here. One is about protests
And the other is about the way they express themselves with celebrations on the field. At length yesterday, you know, we played all the awful things that he said back in 2016 about Colin Kaepernick and how bad that was and how insincere it was and how he was willfully misunderstanding of what that was and why it was. So he tried to walk that back a bit yesterday, saying that he understands more, he's more aware, he has educated himself about what's going on, and yet we also played the comments from February of 2020 when he reiterated the very same things. So I don't know what happened between February and, say, now, whether or not how rapid that was and what's real and what's not. But I just want you to listen to his explanation of what, in his mind, makes any protesting valid and okay.
At the basis, that sportsmanship is important. Respect for the game and your opponents. I do believe in that. You know, you don't run up a score, things like that. But here's what I see different. Every year, and this has been going on for a while, even went on when I was managing, there's more and more attention being paid to who does good and who does bad in the game. I mean, you don't do anything right or wrong in a clutch moment that you don't get celebrated for or criticized for. So I've seen how that has impacted players emotionally. A great example was Eck all those years when he had that very expressive fist pump when he got the third out. That's a lot like what you see today. And I always reasoned it that if it's sincere, I didn't have a problem with it.
I guess we'll do the second part first here. This is going to be part B. And that had to do with player celebrations. And apparently he still gets to decide your level of sincerity, that's up to him, that you can do what you want on the field. So apparently he assumed it was always sincere from his guy Eckersley. Got some of the names that got invoked yesterday. Oh, boy. Wow. Some of the immediate reaches for guys who were playing in the 70s. Man, oh, man. But it's not up to him. It's not up to him to decide the sincerity. Is that how he decides whether he's going to say, don't do that, or yes, you can do that? Is he going to do it in a game? Is he going to pull a guy out of a game? Is he going to, after the game, apologize on behalf of, we don't, that's not the way we play the game because I've decided it wasn't sincere? That's not up to him. He's not a parent. He's a manager. And is he going to have some sincerity test? This is the guy who said that he thought that Colin Kaepernick was insincere? So all of a sudden, yeah, it's all okay, it's all okay, it's all okay. However, everything had a caveat. And more significantly is how he felt about players' right to protest. And even that had a qualifier where he gets to decide whether or not it's okay.
And what I see now is that with players that are being more exuberant, I take, Tim Anderson for an example. Now it's people showing that, hey, I'm coming through. In fact, Major League Baseball is encouraging them to do so. And if I see that it's sincere and it's directed towards the game, that's displaying the kind of emotion that you want. You know, as a coach, what you want to do is you want to get players passionately involved with the competition. And if you do that, that's how you get exciting games, you're entertaining. So the fact that now that we're encouraging players to be more expressive, you know, I'm going to treat like Tim, for example, part of the family. And you know, the only thing I say, and even some of the people I talk to, if your team celebrates and that their team celebrates, then neither team can be upset when you see celebrations, as long as everybody's doing it sincerely.
Okay, again, that's the component of celebrations. What I'm looking for here, Studs, is the cut about protesting, about how he feels about players expressing themselves outside of baseball and their agency as people and as citizens, and where his particular responsibility lies as a leader and what he's allowed to say is okay or not okay. But I mean, all this stuff, it's still his presumption that he's in charge of what they can do and what they can't do. When a good manager understands that they're going to be who they're going to be. And they're professional baseball players. They're not high school players. They're not college players. They're not minor leaguers even, who are also pros. These are pros at the absolute top of their profession who can take the consequences, who can present themselves in a certain way. This is not a high school team. So it is important that he understands and that he has this out and makes it very, very clear, because this is not going to be a comfortable workplace if they feel that this is going to be a struggle for them. So if we have it, it's more significant, I think, to hear how he feels about what makes any sociopolitical protest or any societal protest, what in his mind, what he thinks makes it valid.
I evaluate players' commitment to our team, and based on watching them closely, you can detect the sincerity of when they say, yeah, I'm all in for helping the team. And then you look around and you see that they're not all in. So I think you look at actions. You know, words are words. And I would look at actions. And what I'm seeing, and one reason I'm so encouraged by what I've seen over the last bunch of years, how players are backing up their words with action. They're not just speaking to speak. It's just like somebody's, you know, I'm with this foundation, and then you're the spokesman, but you never work. You got to do the work. And I'm very confident that with a lot of players, and I mentioned earlier, Players Alliance. I had a long talk recently with Reggie Sanders. I can't tell you, you can ask Reggie. I totally support what Players Alliance is about, because it's action, not just verbiage.
He says, I'm going to look for action. You don't get to look for anything. It's not up to you. It's not up to you to judge whether or not they're valid. Words are words. Words matter too. And he doesn't get to say, well, this is okay and this is not okay, because I don't think there's enough action behind this. Action's great. There's no question action's great. But words also matter. And words are fine too, if people want to express themselves with their words. And he's not in charge of deciding, as citizens, as human beings, as people, whether or not what they are doing is valid or okay. That's up to them. It's not up to him. And the fact that he's coming in thinking that it is up to him troubles me tremendously. Because this isn't, he's not some commanding officer who gets to say, this is how we do these things. A Major League Baseball manager should be concerned about telling them where to stand in the field, when to bat, and if it's time for a hit and run. Not how they should feel about anything that's going on in the world. That's their agency. That's their individuality. He doesn't get to say it's valid or it's not valid. Well, I'm going to look for sincerity. I don't care. I'm going to look for actions. You can look for anything. Your players are going to act. Your players are going to be who they are. They are good. They are valid in and of themselves and in their own right. They have been and they will continue to be, regardless of however it's been for you or what you think in the past. That stuff really troubled me. Not to mention, we'll get to that later, not to mention the here's a whole list of black people you can talk to. And he said, I'll take my chances with them. And he immediately defaulted to the I have black friends to prove that this isn't an issue. Okay? Talk to Ron Gant about that. Talk to Ron Gant sometime about that. But it was just the way that was done was troubling. And it just underscored a lot of the... And that's after they cleaned it all up. This is after they've had the meetings. This is after they've said, you know, you're going to have to answer this. You're going to have to answer that. You're going to have... like. And I thought Tim Brown of Yahoo said, why do you assume that you have the privilege of deciding what's sincere or not? And he didn't answer. And he can't answer. Because he doesn't. He doesn't have that privilege. He doesn't know he doesn't have that privilege. And in there lies the problem. James Fegan's been talking to White Sox players. He knows some of the feelings behind the scenes. And he's going to join us next on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
At the same time, you know, I do believe if you check... White Sox, A's, and the Cardinals. I can name you. You know, at least you know the White Sox, whether it was Chet Lemon or Junior Moore or Harold Baines, and You go to the A's with Dave Stewart, Dave Henderson, Ricky Henderson, Dave Parker. You go to the St. Louis with Ray Lamford, Brian Jordan, Reggie Sanders. I mean, I'll take my chance if you talk to any one of those people. I have not, there's not a racist bone in my body. I do not like injustice. And I would support exactly what I mentioned. Anything that's peacefully done and sincerely thought of, and especially with an action at the end of it, will not be a problem.
Ask yourself who talks like that. Who says things like that? Talking about the new White Sox manager and somebody who has been on the phone with a lot of people getting a ton of reaction is our next guest, James Feegan of The Athletic, who covers the White Sox on that beat. He's on Twitter at JR Feegan. He is on the Al Pamani Ford hotline, Al Pamani Ford in Melrose Park. James, how are you?
Oh, just great. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, and I imagine that you heard a wide range of thoughts from the number of White Sox players that you talked to, and without putting names on it, you described what you heard, and you said that the players who spoke to The Athletic ranged from cautiously open-minded to dismissive and derisive in their reaction to the hiring. Can you be any more specific?
I mean, basically, some said that, you know, their reaction to it, their opinion on the move would basically be determined in spring training when, you know, they meet the guy and they listen to him and get a feel for how he manages the game or how he manages the clubhouse. And then it'll determine there that they weren't going to just kind of, you know, launch a, reaction based off of his reputation and stuff like that, which I understand would be I would think would be a healthy approach. And I think ultimately the people who are like, yeah, I hate this, or yeah, I don't get it, or, you know, crack jokes about how old he is and how old the staff would be, are probably going to eventually get to that same mindset of, let's see what we got. I mean, this is the hand we're dealt. Let's see how we deal with it. But yeah, I think it's certainly a situation where a lot of people look at this, with a side eye and say, like, is this really what, the best option they had? Is this really, like, the result of a search for the best candidate? Or is it kind of a situation where this is a guy who had a very tight relationship with ownership? And, yeah, he's got a lot of experience. Yeah, he's had a lot of success. But this doesn't seem like, the natural move for a top organization to do, and or what, was sought out when they originally, fired Rick Renteria.
Are you making any presumptions, or do you have any information about the composition of the staff?
Not like anything hard. I mean, there's been talk that it seems there's definitely a sense of that it could be a lot more retention of people already there than maybe you have if you hire AJ Hinch, or if you hire a top bench coach for him, hired like a Matt Quatraro, I'm going to butcher his name, or Joe Espada from the Astros, and they want to bring in some of their own guys or people from the organization that they're currently with, obviously, that, they feel like would help. So maybe it's not going to be that big sweep in. The fact that they name drop Kurt Hassler in the middle of the presser, I don't think they do that if there's not a real aim to kind of bring him on and keep him on, at least as a bullpen coach. So, yeah, I just didn't get the vibe that there's going to be a big internal wave. But, no, I don't have the, a hardcore down that they're going to bring back. They're going to promote from within on the pitching coach or anything like that.
Which, and I wonder how then he's going to be shepherded into pitch lab, how he's going to be shepherded into understanding. Does he know what they do with Rapsodo devices and Edgertronic cameras and measuring every vector? Is he going to care about spin rate? All these things that modern teams use to maximize their opportunity of winning. He's still talking about metrics. People are still talking about analytics. And it's like, it's like that was 20 years ago. The Billy Beane revolution is forever ago, and we can't talk in that particular idiom at the moment when we're still on to the next thing, and there are probably teams now with proprietary information on to the next thing after what we already know. So to even bring the conversation back to, like, we're not talking about, weighted on base average. We're talking about different new kinds of measurements here. How far along are we, and what has to be done to get him up to speed?
I mean, at the same time, he was with the Angels last year, and he, talked a lot about drawing stuff from Joe Maddon and seeing how he handled it. And, you know, he watched as the Angels basically rejiggered around Dylan Bundy's arsenal to figure it out. I would, I guess, at least be optimistic of the idea that he wouldn't get in the way of that. But, yeah, I don't expect him to be on the ground floor. I don't expect him to be, watching guys from the side and seeing if your release point is here, you'll get an extra inch of ride on your four-seamer. That doesn't seem like a story that's going to pop out of the year. But I would imagine that, I mean, that's not that out of line with, you know, how Rick Renneria talked or how the organization has talked the last couple of years. And that's not necessarily, you know, going to be seen as a huge endorsement to say, but like they've always kind of preached the same line of, we use analytics, but we also want to, blend in our observations or our cut or instinct. That's the same thing, Ricky has been saying the last few years. So I probably more see as you wish that they had gone toward a line where they kind of advanced the conversation off that rhetoric, where I almost see this as a maintenance of how things have been the last 5 years, where, yeah, you have those guys behind the scenes. You have your Everett Tiefer tour, taking guys in the pitch lab and reworking their arsenal, making them efficient prospects, you know, turning Jimmy Lambert from a guy who's getting hammered with a sinker, slider, and A-ball into an actual major league pitcher. You still have those stories gone on the scene, and maybe you're just looking more for TLR to kind of not get in the way of that type of progress and be open-minded to it. Then obviously it doesn't seem like he'd be someone who's in a position at this point in his career to be driving that.
If you want to get a look at James Fegan, you can. He is on our Twitch feed right now, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score. I know you and I have both been talking to others, officials within the White Sox organization who are really sort of taken aback by this because of the left turn that this may be, or a flat out reversal culturally because of how hard the team has worked to embrace the expressiveness, the multiculturalism, and put it out there and sell these guys for allowing them to really be who they are. Do you think there needs to be some sort of internal reckoning or some way of selling this in the building after the fact?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a hump to get over in terms of convincing everybody that he's going to be able to understand him. And you know, you played the answer that he gave to, I think that was my question, coming on the show, and it wasn't the best. It wasn't ideal.
But, that's great.
If I was trying to put an optimistic spin on it, it wasn't someone taking their February 2020 comments and digging their heels and their double downing on it. It was someone who had been there, who had been very outspoken against, you know, anthem protests and stuff like that, realizing, oh, man, I have this job now. I'm going to need to adjust. And it was him making progress toward it. Now it's not where you want to be. And I don't know why you're really going to have to prove that all his strategic know-how and all his experience is worth bringing him along on this journey to be sensitive to the voices in the clubhouse. But I at least thought there was some recognition of, all right, the way I've been looking towards this is not going to fly and I need to adjust. And I need to do things like talk to the Players Alliance and stuff like that. There's some sense of doing the work that is happening there. I would say as far as adjusting to the clubhouse and stuff like that, and you know, there's a lot of stuff yesterday about like, man, this guy's gonna be managing Tim Anderson now. Tim Anderson is a guy who has hit 330 the last couple of years. So I think probably this is going to be a better situation in the sense that that's the guy who's established, that's the guy one of your stars. The manager is gonna come in knowing that he kind of has to let him be him, as opposed to if he's coming in 2017, 2018, and Tim Anderson is weathering the worst struggles of his career and trying to find who his identity is, maybe that's a lot worse situation for him to be brought in. And, you know, conversely, you could say, maybe not this year, but maybe down the line, you have some prospects who are coming in who are going to weather their struggles, who are going to be from different backgrounds. And maybe that's a little bit of something you have to watch for and worry about is how supportive are they going to be, or how supportive somebody who's not the star, franchise, cornerstone, shortstop, someone who's on the fringes. Someone like a Bruce Maxwell the last couple of years, who was very outspoken the other day on Twitter endorsing Tony La Russa. How much is that going to feel like he can speak out and speak his voice? Maybe that's probably more the position I would direct my doubt towards. He's going to ruin Tim Anderson. I don't think he's going to really ruin the 330 hitting shortstop. I think he's probably going to let that guy do what he does.
To me, it is a matter of ruin. I think it's probably taking a little bit too far. I think to me, it's about how comfortable a workplace is over 6 months.
Sure.
And especially amid further what we can only presume are going to be, you know, COVID incursions to everything that they do, that
It's about comfort in the workplace and the whether or not you're looked at as an employee down here or a peer up here, the way modern younger managers look at their players and understand that it needs to be player first, like the NBA has as an example. And I guess I'm not worried about anybody getting ruined. I'm just worried about people being unhappy or uncomfortable in a way that may affect their jobs. And I guess it leads me to this larger idea of how he views himself at what level of authority, James. Because when he says, well, protests are okay if I see sufficient action. Words don't matter. I need to declare that valid. And with celebration, he's the arbiter of sincerity. He gets to deem, well, if I think it's sincere, then it's okay. That level of presumed authority over them, I think is misplaced. And I don't think that makes for a comfortable work situation every day.
Yeah, I thought Tim Brown of Yahoo asked a great question, near the middle portion of the presser about like what gives you the privilege of being kind of the arbiter of this. And I felt Tony took it more as a question of what's your process, not why do you feel like you deserve to even have this process in the first place. Yeah, I think that definitely that shows some ego, that shows some feeling of superiority that he's in charge, and I wonder how that plays out, because as you said, I think this clubhouse has really thrived the last couple of years of letting guys be themselves, of maybe a harsher veteran clubhouse, especially with the defensive struggles he would having, would probably come down on Eloy Jimenez being the goofy fun guy that he is. But Eloy kind of needs to thrive the way he needs to thrive. He's a hitting savant. You want to make that guy comfortable as you can, even if he's falling into the net. And you mentioned comfort in your workplace. That reminds me of like the day that Yoan Moncada signed his extension. I was talking to Tim Anderson about it and what his process was for signing his deal, and how he talked about like from the moment the White Sox came to him, he was like, yeah, I want to do it. He told his agent, like, let's get up a good price, but at the end of the day, make the deal. I'm comfortable here. And that he said, the quote he had was like, there's nothing like being comfortable in your workplace. And so, yeah, I think that's probably a valid concern of you've had so much luck, so much success locking in these guys right away, because all these guys get here and they feel super supportive and that they're going to be able to play out the struggles and they're willing to give up years of the control. Does that same vibe kind of sustain itself? It seems like there's a lot that they're putting on the line of the idea that this guy can get them over the hump and win in these next 2-3 years, which are really kind of mean the world in declaring this a success. And so is that experience, is that know-how that he brings worth all that? And that's where I probably really get skeptical of this again, because really that's another question mark, because this guy does not have recent experience to really say that he's going to drop in and he's going to be an expert. Really, you're expecting a whole new brand of adjustment on that level as well. So that's probably where you lose me a little bit on selling this as being, a great idea.
That's well said. And lastly, and quickly, if we can, what does this do to Rick Hahn? What does it do when we know there's no secret how this went down, and he remains the general manager. He remains nominally in charge of the larger baseball decisions. When he picks up the phone right now, and everybody in baseball knows what this is, has he retained enough authority, or can he rebuild enough authority that this doesn't damage his league-wide credibility?
I would say, this is still his project. This is still his roster. This is still like the talent he's built up over these past, 4 years. He's in such a rare place. I've been told in the past that there was always his intention that this would be like his last job, that he would kind of fish out here. And he's been given such unprecedented kind of latitude. Most people really don't see their entire project to contend declared a failure in 2016 and torn down and get to live out and see that. So I think he's still in a unique position of having so much control and influence and being placed as the architect I'm sure the last week or so has been hard, but I don't see that being all cast away when people kind of zoom out from this and view this roster as really a construction of his design all the way out. And I think ultimately if it works, I don't know how everyone else would read it, but I would probably read it as you know, the plan of Hahn and Williams working out rather than, you know, this team was, you know, in dire straits and Tony La Russa dragged them to the finish line. I think this is still his project here.
James, all very good stuff. Thank you very much for making yourself available today.
Thanks for having me.
That is James Feegan of The Athletic. We're going to take a little break from some baseball talk and baseball angst to do some football talk and Bears angst. Games against the Saints generally don't bode well, certainly the last five of them. But Anthony Herron is going to sit in for the next hour because it is a Bears Friday with everything that is going on. And we'll talk about the Bears and the Saints and where they are and what they're doing and how they're going to do it. So don't go anywhere. He's going to join us next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.